Blog Talk Radio.
What's up, world, and welcome to Realty Universal Radio, the fastest hour in radio, no doubt about it. I'm Randy Zachary, and this is a show about real estate, about God, about life, about giving back, about being the change in the world that you'd like to see. I'm privileged to bring to you Natalie Mullinex and Realty Universal, a company dedicated to excellence. Realty Universal is a revolution founded on a very simple principle. We believe sellers and buyers should have choices. We have been a pioneer in the menu program system. More on that, of course, a little later. Natalie Mullinex, president and founder of Realty Universal, averaged over $80 million a year in sales prior to stepping back to focus more on building Realty Universal membership network. She's an accomplished speaker, writer, consultant, trainer, and, oh, by the way, mother. She travels worldwide, literally, spreading the gospel, if you will, of Realty Universal. And now, Natalie Mullinex.
Hey, everybody. I'm so happy to be here another week and so excited, and time is moving by fairly quickly. I'm actually in Nevada this week, and today we have a great show, which the timing is perfect because we're going to be discussing the TRID rules. And if you don't know what that is, just listen in. For those of you that do, we want to know, are you ready? These rules are actually, their rules are for mortgage companies, and they will definitely affect sellers, buyers, agents, and brokers in the United States. So today we have a wonderful guest, Laura Fournier. She's a loan expert and well-versed in the why and the hows of this new procedure that are going into effect in the U.S. So we'll dig in a couple minutes, and this isn't going to really, I guess it's just strictly U.S. We'll go over, but so we have some listeners that are out of the area, but for most of our listeners, you'll be able to tune right in. And I think a lot of people, if you're agents or brokers, will be familiar with these changes. You've heard of the changes. They were supposed to take effect end of July, beginning of August, and then they were extended 3 months. But I think you're going to find some interesting tidbits today. If you'd like to call in, our call-in number is 347-945-5428, 347-945-5428. You can also email us at radio@realityuniversal.com or go to our site, realityuniversal.com, and fill out the contact us form, and we will definitely get back to you. We also love your feedback, questions, thoughts, and we really do go through them. It may take some time, but we really do go through it and appreciate it, and we'll respond. So here we are going to go. TRID, are you ready? Now, without further ado, I'd like to welcome our guest, Laura Fournier.
Hello. How are you?
How are you?
I'm excited to be on this show and to be talking about TRID. That's what we call TRID, but acronym is TRID, standing for TILA, RESPA, Integrated Disclosures. So TRID is much, much easier to say.
Much, much easier. Wow. And, well, you know, this is so exciting because being in the business for 30 years, and when we go through it, there's some things I'm not liking about this, but I think that's just a personal, because none of us like change, you know? Some of us don't like change. So before we get into TRID, tell us about yourself, Laura, because you have an extensive background, and I'd like our listeners to hear.
Well, I started my career in banking, and through being in banking and a branch manager, I did lending, and then I officially jumped into mortgage lending in 1993, but I was a loan officer at the bank since 86, so many years of banking and then mortgage banking since then. So I've been a loan officer full-time since 1993 and enjoying it most of the time. And, yes, many changes, and that's pretty much the name of the game in the mortgage and real estate business.
You've seen it through all the changes. I mean, all through, the interest rate changes. The underwriting change has been tremendous. I think when you first got in, they weren't doing scoring, right? And now everybody goes by credit scores?
Yes, everything is credit score driven, almost too much. The common sense and the underwriting decisions are kind of pulled out of it, and it's all credit score driven. That's probably the most important factor in your loan is your credit score.
Wow. It's just, it's a shame sometimes because I know in the old days you could have good explanations for things and then it would be looked at, and now it's a lot different than that.
Oh, yes, the good old days. I didn't ever think I would say that, but
you
do have to look back and see all the changes and go, yeah, some of that stuff was good when you could just put a lengthy explanation letter and, you know, move on from, you know, past difficulties.
It was kind of like you could really work the loan, right? You could package it and spell and you put it in and build it and make it make a story, you know, the true story and explain it, and that was looked at. Now it's just paper after paper after paper and scores, and isn't it just kind of like we must have this document to be in compliance, but we have to it's almost, I don't know, correct me if I'm wrong, I mean there's certain type of lending, but if you're going to go through regular Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, you're pretty much limited, aren't you, into what you can
absolutely
to do like you could in the old days.
Everything you said was absolutely correct. It's documentation, and almost everything we document two or three different directions. So we really need a lot of paperwork and a lot of explanations and trail all the money and where it's come from. And just the documentation is very daunting for the buyers. And it takes a lot of effort on their part to get all that paperwork and if they're organized, it's a lot easier. But if you have to go searching for it, it does seem like a very big task.
And you have to almost, and you as a lender and loan officer too, has to be able to package it so that when you're submitting it, certain items aren't missed, right? And then, I mean, we all know as far as being a real estate broker, you know, loans are in process, they get a conditional approval, and then all of a sudden this is missing or that's missing or the underwriter wants this or wants this, and it may not be that you didn't put it in there, they're just wanting other further details, right?
So it's yes, they want further details, but I really have to spend a lot more time just slowing down and reviewing each document, like especially the bank statements, almost like line by line by line to make sure I'm not missing something, you know, like a NSF fee or something that's going to generate another piece of paper, a deposit over $500 generates another piece request for more paperwork. So like every deposit.
So non-sufficient funds, if they have a bounce check, that's going to be a red flag?
Oh, yes. And for a lower credit score, that is a big red flag to have non-sufficient funds fees on your bank account. And now the banks have gotten oh so helpful by putting little charts usually on the last page of how many are for this statement period and how many they've had year to date. So even if you don't have one for the current statement, you have to go back and make sure that they didn't have any from previous months, because that could be asked about as well. If the person has higher credit scores, it's not usually so much a big deal, but if they have lower credit scores, that is a red flag for the underwriter.
Well, what about, and you're saying any deposit over 500, I could understand over 10,000 with the U.S. rules, but why 500?
If it's non-payroll, they want to know what the source of the money is. They just need an explanation letter. But if it's more than 25% of their gross monthly income, then they actually want to source that deposit as well as the explanation of what it is. Because we've been charged with the task of proving that the borrower doesn't have any undisclosed debt. And that is one of the big, bugaboos for Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, that they are just very hot on that trail of undisclosed debt. So anything
and
that could
monies,
be a,
right? And undisclosed
right.
Monies,
anything like, that could be a debt, or we just have to make sure it was, you know, the source of that deposit wasn't from a loan or something that would create a debt for the
loan,
borrower.
Not when they were saying, "Hey, we want to make sure it's not drug money or mattress money."
Yeah,
or
well, that too. We're supposed
country.
To. Huh? Yeah, we're supposed to kind of keep an eye out for strange deposits and maybe have to fill out some forms, but that hasn't really happened. But it is part of the banking regulations
and let
to
me,
watch for unusual deposits.
Because it used to be, I mean, we've always had to have seasoned money. You know, your money has to be documented so they know that it was really your money, or if it's a gift, they have to trail, you know. But I didn't realize that they're even going further into, you know, usually saying, hey, if it's in your bank account, it's cool, you know, basically. So now they're going further and wanting you to document that. That just seems like such a violation of privacy, but I guess it is what it is.
Yes.
You know, I kind of wonder,
absolutely,
does Uncle Sam do that too for tax purposes, or, you know, so would you say that a lot of these changes that you're talking about now with the bank accounts, I mean, I know being in a long time as a broker, we've always need seasoning to show, you know, that they really had this money and the money is their money, or if it's a gift money. But would you say a lot of these changes have come place after 2008 that are just much more dramatic?
Yes, and even after the crash, definitely so many changes since then, but in particular since Frank Dodd bill passed in 2011, these new, you know, this last 4 years have just been the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, that's a mouthful, them making all the rules and the regulations that support the Frank Dodd bill, and that's where TRID comes in. 'Cause this
wow.
is the end result of the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau making the rules to support, you know, what was in the Frank Dodd bill and getting things the way, you know, they want us to be able to communicate with the buyers and give them more and more and more information. So it's supposed to be consumer friendly, that the consumer gets more information, but it's also creating a lot of, I guess, unexpected results because of the way the rules are written.
So let us bring, that brings us right around to the TRID, because the Frank Dodd is, it's supposed to protect the consumer. Some of these rules coming in just seem too strong, too severe, and they're hurting people. So the TRID is definitely totally consumer-driven, so people understand it. So tell us what it means. What's TRID? And what, I mean, you said
TRID
the definition
is,
of it, but the reason they're doing it.
The reason they're doing it is because they want the disclosures to be very clear and easy to read and concise, so that the consumer knows what they're getting when they select their mortgage product. So I think in that respect, TRID did accomplish that goal, because the forms are much better than they have been in the past, and they are very clear, although there's a few little strange parts to them. But for the most part, I think the actual forms that they changed and the forms that they combined to make the new forms are very good. So they took the Truth in Lending statement and the RESPA documents that we have to disclose to the borrower, and they combined four disclosures into one. So now the borrower won't get a Truth in Lending or a good faith estimate, and then two minor disclosures about the appraisal and servicing. Those are all combined into the new form called the loan estimate. So up until this coming Friday, we're going to be under the Truth in Lending and good faith estimate that everybody's been familiar with forever. And starting Saturday, October 3rd, we will, on new applications, issue a loan estimate that will cover four documents.
Wow, that's going to be, I don't know how the lenders, especially a small lender, is able to have kept up with that and make the changes between their computer systems and forms and everything. Are your company's pretty up to date from what you were saying?
Yes, but they've been working all year, and I don't know what the expense is, and that would be something interesting to find out, is how much the mortgage industry had to spend to get the systems updated to change over all of these items, because it's a whole new system that's changed our origination system. So untested, except for, you know, examples. So we'll see on Saturday how it works in reality.
Wow. That's going to be interesting. I don't think it just seems unfair that companies that maybe a smaller company would have to change all their systems to have it work, you know, in detail.
And I think that's why they put that postponement in, because they were getting a lot of feedback that, you know, we weren't ready from, you know, the back end to, you know, implement all of these changes. So, but now this time they haven't postponed. So October 3rd, this coming Saturday, is the date that it's all going to happen, and you're going to have to issue the new forms. So not only the loan estimate form is new, but the final disclosures for the HUD-1 have now changed. So now you won't have a HUD-1, you will have a closing disclosures. But that's the simple part of TRID, the new forms, because they're
that's
very
the simple
easy
part.
To
that
read.
That doesn't sound very
that's
simple to me.
That's the simple part.
It doesn't sound simple
that's
for
simple
a small
part.
Company that, wow. It could, well, you know, one of the things, the old good faith estimate is now going to be called the loan estimate.
And, yes.
Or,
and that will
combine
the truth in lending, which is shows the buyer their annual percentage rate. That was the truth in confusion form, that what we like to call it in the industry. Because it was always very confusing to the borrower what APR was. And so we'll combine that.
Exactly.
So it will now be a three-page form that will show them everything about their loan, and it will show them the annual percentage rate, and we'll also talk to them about, you know, whether we will service the loan and that they do get a copy of their appraisal. But the first page of the loan estimate is very comprehensive, and it really gives them a lot of detail on their loan, what type of loan, the term, the purpose of the loan, whether it's conventional FHA, VA. That's all pretty standard. And we'll tell them whether their rate is locked. And then it just gives them all the information, loan amount, interest rate, payment, whether there's a prepayment penalty or a balloon payment. And then it actually breaks down the projected payments. The whole thing is very broken down, and whether we're going to escrow for their property taxes. And it will give them their estimated closing costs and their estimated cash to close right on page one, which is really fantastic because it really covers very clearly everything about their loan all on that one page. So
well, now, say I'm a
that
buyer.
That part's a good part.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I guess I do feel so sorry for the small companies that weren't able to put this in, or I guess they – I hope somebody, you know, you would almost think that they would have a program. They could say, here, guys, go buy this because we're making you do this law, and now you have to change. But it's not going to happen that way, I guess. What? Tell me, if I'm a buyer and I'm contacting you for a pre-approval, which many buyers have to have if they're going to get a loan, because most sellers will not accept an offer on their property without at least a pre-approval, which a pre-approval, you know, as you can explain, is different from a conditional approval or a final approval. So I'm a buyer and I come to you and I want a pre-approval. Does this have to be all done that for that?
Not for a pre-approval, because we don't technically have a application until we have a property address. So without that element of the property address, we can do a pre-approval, and we wouldn't give the buyer at that point a loan estimate, because that locks in a lot of the fees that we state, so we wouldn't want to do that. But we could give them a closing cost worksheet, is what we've been calling it at our company, and every company has their own little name for it. But we would let them know their approximate cash to close. But the formal loan estimate, we don't have to give out unless we have met that legal definition of a loan application. And you have to have six elements to have a loan application. So hopefully you're minus.
What are they?
Let me see if I can get my head wrapped around.
Well,
okay.
I know
your
have
name.
To,
yep. You have to have your name, the customer's name, their income, Social Security number, of course, because you want to pull credit. The estimate of the value, that's more if it's a refinance. The mortgage loan amount that the buyer is seeking, and then the property address. And there used to be a seventh factor, but the TRID is taking that out. any other information deemed necessary by the loan officer. So that's gone in the definition of an application. But for a pre-approval, when the it's a purchase transaction, you would not want to have that property address. Otherwise, you would have to issue a loan estimate, and you wouldn't really even know all the factors, but you would be, you could be stuck with those figures that you gave the borrower.
But you could after, so because I know there's hefty fines, which we'll get into a little bit later, for things not being followed to the T under TRID. So if you have an address, you said that triggers TRID, do you think?
Yes.
On
if
your,
you
on
know
your
an address, that makes it an application, and then you have to provide the loan estimate to the borrower within 3 business days.
Oh, that's
so
terrible.
You really want to not have that address information. You could, you know, but you could have, know that say they want to look at 350. You know, you could work up numbers for them, and if they like to voluntarily provide their documentation, you can take all that and do a pre-approval. But
okay.
You just don't want to have a property address so that your TRID guidelines aren't triggered at that particular point. Because once you give this loan estimate, the mortgage company is committed to many of these fees unless you have a valid change of circumstance, and you might not know what you need to know.
Exactly. So, well, let's take, okay, this is good, just phenomenal information. So a pre-approval, technically, like don't ask for the address, basically. Just get a pre-approval. It's not going to trigger TRID. If you actually do a formal application, TRID is triggered, and then you must give what this loan estimate, which we all use in the industry called a good faith estimate from years ago,
yes.
I mean up till now, you must give them the loan estimate with these documents included, the other three, it's a total of 4 documents, within 3 business days of their loan application?
Yes, so it's all 4 of the old documents just became this 1 document. So in
okay.
that sense, the mortgage industry actually did cut a few pieces of paper out of their, you know, mountain
right.
of paperwork that they like the buyer to sign. So if you're doing the, as from a loan officer perspective, I take all the buyer's information. If they just want like a pre-qualification, because you had asked about the differences,
right.
I would just take what they stated and then work up a pre-qualification. But if they want a pre-approval, then I gather all their work information and I pull credit, and then if they voluntarily want to give me their documentation, which hopefully they do because they want a pre-approval, I can verify their income and their assets and issue a pre-approval letter, just like we've always done,
right?
But minus that address. Like, they don't tell me I'm writing a contract
right.
on 123 Main Street, you know,
right.
Silver Spring, Maryland. Don't tell me that. You can say Silver Spring, Maryland. And I'll work up just like I always have, just like every loan officer has.
Yeah, but it just seems to me like there's just going to be so many little holes. In Hawaii, we call holes pukas. And it seems like there's going to be so many little holes that I could see innocent lenders getting in trouble. And I just, my heart goes out that way because I just know, usually I just wish there was, even though it starts October 3rd, I think, and we have to protect consumers, no doubt, without a shadow of a doubt. I mean, you know, we don't want anybody that's doing the wrong things not to not do the right things. But I just wish there was a period of time that there was going to be a little bit of leniency because I could see somebody say, oh, wait a minute, maybe an address gets typed on there by mistake because for years you're used to putting, you know, what's the property address, you know, on there. Or just little
exactly.
things. But
or the agent sends you the listing. Please don't send me the listing yet.
Oh, my gosh. Exactly. And
you
that,
know,
because
technically
be...
then you have an address, so you want to just, you know, communicate that. Don't do that to your loan officer until there is a contract, and then
yeah,
they'll
I really
type
wish
it in
they
and
would have...
send out that loan estimate.
No, I really wish they would have more. I mean, they're going to tell you they do, but they don't. I wish on these committees and these when they put the task force out to make these changes that they really would dig in and get more people that are truly in the industry's opinion rather than – and I know they do with surveys and NAR and et cetera, but it's just – and with the, you know, with the loan – I'm saying on the broker side, agent real estate, but with lenders, it just seems that some of it's a little unfair. But, well, we'll get
– I second everything you just said, because honestly, they don't have an address until they have a contract. But
right.
I don't believe that's, unless they clarify that, and there are a lot of gray areas in TRID, and when we call for clarification as we're learning all these rules, you know, it's like calling the IRS. You call once and you get one answer, and you call again and you get a second answer and then a third answer. So they're not even clear on some of these things where they wrote out the rule and the regulation, and it's a little, it's ambiguous, and we're trying to decipher what did you really mean. So some of these things, even over the last months that we've been learning, have changed from even 2 weeks ago. Oh, no, now they're saying this. So I'm sure they're the next quarter or so, they're going to shake out, hopefully, some of these more gray areas. But
right now,
we're taking a very literal reading of what they've said.
Well, let me ask you this. For the loan, okay, so you've got the pre-approval is a pre-approval. I mean, a pre-qual is just a pre-qual without having all your documentation. A pre-approval is going to be, you're going to pull, well, I think with the pre-qual, you're still going to pull credit, right?
Yes.
But on the, okay, so then approval is going to definitely flag TRID, and then a conditional approval will. Well, let me ask you this. Many buyers aren't ready to lock in a rate, although sometimes they really should, or say they extend something or they want to change something, they want to put more money down, they want to borrow more money, yada, yada, yada. What happens? You have to do a whole new TRID, and does that, at that point, does that trigger that three-day time period?
Those items would be a sound and viable reason for a revised loan estimate to go out. So
okay.
If the customer makes a request, then yes, we can do a revised loan estimate. And there's actually a few defined reasons for doing a new loan estimate. And one of them is customer request. That is an actual category. I can list all five of them for you.
Sure.
Another one is an extraordinary event beyond the control of any interested party. So that could be, for an example, like a flood. Like you have the hurricane coming up the coast and that particular area floods. So that's not on anybody's control. So something like that could trigger the need for additional inspections from the appraiser. So we would have to add some fees, and that would generate a new loan estimate. Second thing could be something, information specific to the consumer or the transaction that was relied upon when providing the loan estimate that was inaccurate or changed after the loan estimate was provided. So that could, just a couple of examples, because everybody could be saying, what in the world does that mean? So the credit score of the borrower could change during the loan process.
They went and bought
appraisal.
A car when they weren't supposed to.
Exactly. or also during the loan process, the credit can get, the customer can request new credit and they don't tell the loan officer about it, and that could change their credit score, or a collection could be added to the credit report, and that would trigger a change on their credit report. But other
what about
things
an appraisal?
Would be the appraisal coming in low would be another example of something that could change and cause us to have to change some of the fees or the figures on the loan estimate. New information that comes in during the loan process would also be another reason for a change of circumstance, and that would be like a subject to appraisal where the appraiser went out and there was repairs that needed to be made. So that would trigger us putting another inspection fee to the...
Why? Just because what if it's a $100 inspection fee and the seller is willing to pay it?
Then that could go on the seller side, and
so wouldn't
that
trigger
would be
it?
Fine.
I mean, are there ways to not trigger
no,
it?
No, then you would not need. If the seller was willing to pay for it, then you would not need a new loan estimate, because that would go on the seller side, and the seller side does not impact the loan estimate.
Also,
when you lock the interest rate, that's another reason that a new loan estimate will go out, because then it will say that it's locked, and some of the fees could have changed because of locking it.
Wow, and it's always 3 days. 3 days after the change, they have to have an updated one?
When you become aware of an event, the loan officer has 3 days to send out that new loan estimate. So if I get an appraisal and there's a repair that needs to be done, then I know I need the appraiser to go back out to the property, and he's going to charge a fee for that, usually about $100. So I need to, within 3 days of getting that appraisal, to have a new loan estimate sent out with that fee on there. So if I forget and I remember on day four, that's my problem. I have to pay the $100 fee, and I can't pass it on to the borrower. But if I do it in that 3 day time frame.
Oh, so if it's a $1,000 fee, you'd have to pay it if it's the fourth day?
If I knew about the appraisal, I have 3 days to make that change on the loan estimate, or it's
that
not
isn't
going
fair.
To.
I mean, just okay. So how do you know? I mean,
don't
when it
get
comes,
distracted.
They say the devil's in the details, and I'll tell you what. Mm-hmm. I'll tell you what. I really been in the business for 30 years, and I love to always know every aspect, because I think we all need to do a good job. The buyers and sellers really are not, unless they've been in it, do not realize how much back-end work is involved. There's just so much back-end work. So just if for your protection, too, somebody calls you up and says, okay, there's been this change. You're going to request an email, request it in writing, because how is the documentation there to protect everybody and you that, you know, this was given, and I've done it within 3 days. What stops somebody who, you know, from saying, no, it was 5 days ago and you haven't done it yet? You know, I mean, there's all kinds of scenarios. So it has to be in writing, I'm assuming, right?
Yes, because well, luckily, our back end has set up a lot of reports that generate when these items, so that all is tracked by compliance department.
Okay.
So they're usually my, watching my back, so to speak. And sometimes, you know, they'll say, didn't this happen? You know, you need to take care of this. And then my processor. So we're all a team, and we've got to be helping each other, because you do get distracted, but hopefully one of the other team members is picking up on all of these things that have happened. Because it has happened, and I have paid $100 fee before.
Oh, no, that's true. But somebody calls in, if they call in and they say, okay, or just the buyer calls in circumstance of change, or you know what, I want to change, I want to do this or this, you say, okay, give me an email, and is that when the clock starts ticking? I'm just wondering, documentation-wise, going to have to document it and get really, because this trade is a really, there's huge fines, and it's just kind of, I guess that's all you can do is basically ask everybody to put it and send it in writing, right, for documentation.
It's always best to have, it's always best to have a paper trail, absolutely.
Or
notes,
you send
it
to them and
file
it
and,
back.
Yes. And that's going to be another very, very important. I don't know if we want to jump into that right now, but
sure.
Getting the borrower to actually acknowledge certain things in the process right up front. This is a brand new concept, so this is going to be something we've never, ever done before, is the borrower has to acknowledge their intent to proceed with the loan. Once they get the loan estimate, they have 10 days to say they want to proceed. And we're going to have a form, Equity Resources will have a form in the loan package, and they'll just sign it and send it back with the loan package. And that can be electronically signed as well.
That's
what I was
going to
ask.
Could
it be documented? Proceed.
Yes,
that's, it can.
That's important.
And that's an important date, because when we issue the loan estimate, there's a date issued. And this is right in the top section on page one of the loan estimate. And then it tells them whether the rate's locked or not. But it tells them that the everything expires on a date and a time, 10 business days out. So if they don't acknowledge that they want to proceed in those 10 business days, the loan estimate at that time can be revised without any incident whatsoever. So if you have a borrower that you send a loan estimate out and they don't, you know, do their intent to proceed, then the loan company is no longer bound by that loan estimate. So that was one good thing. So if there was a clerical error, hopefully you have that little out. But if they do send in their intent to proceed, then most of the figures, unless you have a valid change of circumstance situation, then you are bound by the estimate that you provided. So that's
so
why it's very, very important to get everything correct before you send it out.
Exactly. So every single time that the three-day rule is triggered, you know, where they have you have to do it for a revised loan estimate, every time if it's a three-day situation, no matter what, the buyer has 10 days to sign it?
No, that's just in the beginning for that intent to proceed.
Okay.
That they have that. But it was just a little nuance that was thrown in that was actually beneficial to the mortgage company that was not available on previous good faith estimate rules.
Well, let me, if when they do revise the loan estimate, when you do revise it and you have 3 days to do it, and it's after, say, the buyer changes the loan, they want to lock in the rate or they extend or there's been a circumstance where it has to be changed, how much time does the buyer have to sign that to acknowledge that new revised loan estimate? Is that that's not 10 days?
No, they don't actually. It would just be sent to them, and then you have assumed 3 days for it, but they don't have to acknowledge. That's a little unclear. I guess I should put that out there.
Yeah.
But it's more on us to provide that to them.
Okay. But I just think,
so
once, I think with
kind
the
of
law,
like the good faith estimate now, you just you have to send it to them within that time frame,
right,
or we're in violation.
Okay. It just seems with the ruling, you know, how do you prove, or say you sent it to them and they're out of the country or they're traveling or something. But, okay, but that's good. Well, I'm going to jump over to the closing disclosure, which we've all in the industry for years been so used to it being called the HUD, and I don't know why they didn't just keep it the HUD. I guess they want to spell it out, make it simple that everybody understands it, but is it going to look like our HUD? Is it going to look completely different?
It is completely different than the old HUD, and these names were focus grouped. And these were the names that the focus group liked the best and thought were the most descriptive of what they were getting. So that's, I mean, there was a lot of focus group testing on the actual forms, the names, how they were laid out, where the information was positioned on the form. And this is supposed to be very, very, very consumer friendly. So we just have to get used to calling things by different names. But I know a lot of people have already said
we're going to say the HUD.
They're going to call it the HUD anyways. And I said, that's fine. I'll know
what
you're
talking
about.
Oh, that's what it is. Okay.
Yeah, exactly.
So that has a three-day rule attached to it, does too, doesn't it? Or
it's not just 3 days, because with the closing disclosure, which covers the final truth in lending and the HUD-1 settlement sheet, that we actually have to prove that all borrowers and anybody on title has received. So every single person that's either on the loan or on the loan and on title, or they could be on title but not on the loan, all those parties have to acknowledge receipt of the closing disclosure prior to settlement. So we have, if we send it out to them electronically and they acknowledge receipt of it, then we are good to go. If they don't acknowledge receipt of it or they don't have email, for example, then we can mail it to them, but we have to mail it to them basically a week before settlement.
It's not 3 days. Is it 7 days, 10 days? I mean, how much? What's the time
it's
limit?
It's actually six
minimum
days. So if I wanted to settle next Monday, I would today have to mail out my closing disclosure. But before my closing disclosure goes out, I have to have sent out any final loan estimates the day before.
Wow.
At least
and
the day before.
And it's calendar days or business days?
Business days. not the closing disclosure is business days, not to include Sunday or any federal holiday.
Okay, so it does. So you know what? I want you to give your contact information. I just realized we haven't done that yet.
My name's Laura Fournier again, Equity Resources, and my phone number is 301-674-7716.
301-674-7716, and then the website is callequity.net?
Yes, callequity.net.
And I want to just point out, I'm going to read this off because I don't want to, we're already down to 20 minutes left. It goes by so fast. I see you actually lend in Ohio, Pennsylvania, Maryland, D.C., Virginia, North Carolina, South Carolina, Indiana, Arizona, Alaska, Kentucky, Michigan, and Florida?
Yes, but I'm personally licensed in Maryland, D.C., and Virginia.
Perfect.
So it's, I believe, 14 states for the whole company, but I do Maryland, D.C., and Virginia.
That's perfect. And then, so let's go back to the closing disclosure. What are the 6 days? Okay, you have to do it 6 days before. What if, now, in the real world of on our real estate side with agents and brokers, typically the walkthrough is going to be... it depends. 3 days before settlement closing, it could be the day of settlement closing. Say there's a problem and they need to withhold $500 because something's broken, but not enough that it's going to affect the loan. You know, a dishwasher broke or something, and they don't want to hold everything up. Does that type of item, because it comes up quite a lot in our industry, have to be? Does that trigger you changing the closing disclosure, or is that allowed?
That is a fuzzy gray area that we are definitely waiting for more clarification on, because it might not necessarily trigger a new disclosure, but depending on how they wanted to handle that, for instance, if the seller wanted to provide more credit rather than just fixing it, then the loan might have to go back to underwriting, because if you're increasing the seller credit, then the loan has to go back into underwriting. So it might not trigger a redisclosure, but it might trigger just us having to send the loan back to underwriting and then change a lot of the forms and documents to increase that credit. So it might not necessarily trigger the 3-day requirement, but it could trigger a couple other things. So basically, with the closing disclosure timing, the borrower has to receive it 3 business days prior to closing. The 6 days is if it has to be mailed. We can hand deliver the closing disclosure, but our best practice for the agents is possibly to do the walkthrough, or maybe even have 2 walkthroughs. This is a big source of discussion. And I think we're going to have to discuss it again after this actually is in play and we see how this works out. But if you check things out early, and I think this might be subject to how the actual property condition would be. You know, if you knew there were repairs, you might want to go in like 10 days before and make sure they are completed satisfactorily. And then do a quick walkthrough. So that's going to definitely be
last minute. No, I know, but lots of times we have the last minute thing where no one predicted it. You know, just now the air conditioning broke, or this, the stove isn't working, you know, or just something that, you know, these last Murphy Law things, minute things. And I'm just wondering if there's going to be an exclusion for those, because it really wouldn't affect, it doesn't really affect the loan.
There are quite a few things that we can change and that might fall on that, in that category. I keep hearing differing ways that's going to be handled. So I hate to say that's a muddy area. And we are, you know, expecting more clarification on that topic, because everybody is very, very anxious about that. And rightfully so, because it will affect everybody, the buyer, the seller, the agents, the loan company, the movers. So it's going to have to be a conversation follow-up.
Absolutely. We're going to have to follow this up for a year, huh? I wonder, what would you recommend? What would you recommend for sellers, buyers, agents, and brokers to allow? How much extra time do you think that all of us should allow on these deals and planning to be safe?
I think if a borrower is pre-approved and we know they're very organized and, you know, it's a good, clean property, not a short sale or foreclosure, it's going to be very reasonable to do a 30 or 45-day settlement still. But
okay.
If the borrower is still shopping around their mortgage or they are not an organized borrower or you're looking at a foreclosure and a short sale and you know there might be property issues, I think it would be prudent to go 60 days. Absolutely.
Okay.
Because you're going to have more pitfalls just because of the nature of either the borrower or the customer, or the property that they're buying. So you just have to be more observant and prepare for, you know, more pitfalls, more holes
right.
to fall into.
Right.
And a lot more preparation, communication upfront is really the name of the game with TRID, especially getting the borrower prepared. And having that pre-approval is going to be so important. I can't demand that the borrower give me documentation for a pre-approval, but they can certainly give it to me voluntarily, and that will kind of just reveal how they work and are they organized with their paperwork and how timely are they. Because if people are really anxious and motivated, they're going to get that paperwork together very quickly, and
sometimes
we can still move very quickly.
If they have to get P&L statements or other things or self-employed, it could take a lot
right.
longer. You know, it just depends on their. So I guess, and for agents and brokers, say we're getting a contract on a listing and there's going to be back-to-back closing settlements where one party has to move or maybe they need to do a few-day lease back and the other one's moving, it just seems like we probably need another week to 10 days in there everywhere around, you know, so somebody's relocating for a job or just because these other items can happen. Now, is there a point at where the buyer can say, okay, you know, I have the three-day rule. I'm not going to be able to come to you right now. You're not going to be able to send it to me. I'm willing to sign a form signing off on it because we need to close tomorrow. I've just, you know, somehow can you guys do this? All these plans have changed. Is that if the buyer wants to sign, can they do it? Or there's nothing there
no,
so far that you've
they're
seen?
Not going to make
okay.
any exceptions because of those
okay.
fines that you talked about. They're not going to allow closings. The mortgage companies have way too much vulnerability to excessive fines. The minimum
what?
Fine is $5,000 per
crazy
error. I mean, somebody... And it goes up to, I believe, like $1 million fine if it's intentional, like blatant, basically ignoring the rules in an intentional, blatant manner. So I don't see any exceptions going to be made whatsoever to getting that final closing disclosure out beforehand.
Wow.
And we've been excellent. I would say 95% of my loans are already available, like HUD ones going out a week, 10 days. Because as soon as I have a clear to close, I can order my closing documents, and it can be 10 days, it can be 3 weeks. I've moved up so many settlements because
okay.
we have 24-hour underwriting, and which is phenomenal in the industry.
That's amazing.
So,
that's amazing.
So I'm not panic-stricken, but there's just a lot of nuances and new ways that they're doing things and so many little rules and regulations that we have to make sure that we really follow to the T.
Yeah. Sounds like you're doing a great job. Your company, so you're well-prepared and it's going to work fine. And I agree, we are going to really have to revisit this. Watch it, see, you know, and because just like anything new, there's going to be bugs and it's going to take a while to implement it the proper way.
Absolutely, because basically the software hasn't been put to the test because we haven't used it yet. You know, they do their testing, but that's not the full load. And there's a lot of gray areas that the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau hasn't been able to clarify at this point in time. They can't clarify their own rulings, so that's kind of, you know.
Well, that's nothing new. I mean, I think everybody out there is going to be used to government issues and other things. So do if people want to look up this information, I was seeing consumerfinance.gov. Consumerfinance.gov is a good site.
Yeah, I think it's cfpb.gov.
Okay. And they can spell it out, too.
Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. And
okay.
They will just get and flooded with information, and the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau is rolling out a whole new buyers section to help them facilitate, you know, shopping for their loan. But I think a best practice is definitely for the buyer to shop for their loan prior to house shopping, because there's so many deadlines to meet. You don't want to be shopping for your loan once you have a contract, because you're going to eat up, you know, a week or two, and you're going to need that time during the mortgage process. So shop for your loan.
Wow. It's better to be prepared, too, because they could have things on their credit report that they're unaware of. It could be things that they don't even know if they're not pulling monthly reports, you know, or getting the alerts. You know, you can sign up for monthly credit report alerts, which are really highly recommended, because if anything's there and you're not aware of it. But you know how many times, I mean, people, especially with a name, say, like John Smith, you know, they're going to have things that may not be theirs, and it really behooves them to contact you way ahead of time to prepare. This is going to be, I think, I can see, because I can still see a lot of people, especially in the industry, agents, brokers, buyers, sellers, not, you know, just thinking, oh, I've bought over and over, or just being so used to everything being smooth that we all need to plan a little bit longer, plan out a little bit
more
longer.
More planning, more preparation, definitely more work done up front, which is actually a good thing, and to prepare, you know, in advance and to take a lot of the steps, because it will make the process, once you get that contract and everything is on such a deadline, it will just make it so, I can't, as smooth as things can be in the mortgage industry. So, because there's always surprises, but the upfront preparation and the communication is going to be vital between the loan officer and the real estate agent, because we need to know about a lot of the fees day one so we can get the loan estimate out properly. We need to know about the condo management company, homeowners association management company. Because we have to disclose those fees properly.
And that's not easy. That's not easy to get right away either. I mean, sometimes it takes, you know, a week to get. So
the agent needs to know that, you know, right when they're writing that contract. Because we need to disclose that properly, or that's a fee that we can't really change, unless we were told it was, you know, a single family home and it turns out to be a condo. Then I can add a condo fee.
Oh, you're allowed to if there's a change like that. Okay.
If I didn't know,
right?
Then I can make a change. But if I did know, I can't make a change, because that's my clerical error. So I'm just saying, those little things that we used to put off to doing during the contract, we need to do them in the beginning. Also, having the title company selected right at the time of the contract is very helpful, so that we can get the fees. And that's the other thing that I didn't mention. Most mortgage companies, and certainly our company, we will be preparing the closing disclosure. The title company will not be preparing it. We will prepare it and send it to the title company. So that's definitely reversal.
Oh, that's going to be different.
Yes, that's going to be
the HUD, which is going to be closing disclosure, but then they always get the figures from you, and then they're preparing it. So right now they're not even going to be, are they not allowed to prepare it, or is just a safety feature that the mortgage companies want to cover themselves?
Yes, you just said it correct. It's because we are responsible for the figures. It is we are going to get the title figures from them, and we are going to prepare that closing disclosure.
Oh, my goodness.
We are
responsible.
Gosh.
I'm, I'm so used to it. For example, in Hawaii, it takes you sign up to 3 days before you record. You don't close the same day. In Maryland, you sign and settle the same day. And I've seen packages over the years where I've been given packages. I'm going through them at the last minute. I mean, it's just been normal. And I mean, for us. And so this will be very interesting. You know, very very interesting to
it's
see.
It's going to be an interesting last quarter to the year and. And hopefully that will iron out a lot of the unclear areas. But, yes, it's definitely a big, big, big change that is upon us.
We have like 4 minutes left. I just wanted to point out to ask two quick questions real quick. One is, okay, people that have their loans going right now, they're not under the new rule because it's before October 3rd. Say they've already, they have their good faith estimate and everything. And all of a sudden, October 10th, a buyer calls you and says, Laura, I want to change something on my loan. I want to revise all this. Does the new kick in, or are they still grandfathered in under the old?
No.
They started under the old.
Yeah. All applications up until the close of business Friday, as long as I get a signed application, will be under the old rules.
Okay.
And all new applications October 3rd, so Saturday, going forward will be the new rules.
Wow.
So
this has been,
we will be having, that's a great point, two systems running simultaneously until we clear out all the old applications. Now, if somebody was a pre-approval but they don't have a contract, when they do get a contract, if it's October 3rd and that pre-approval becomes an application, then they will be on the new rules.
Oh,
but
my
if
goodness.
They got a contract
like...
Friday,
wow.
And... then, and I got a loan package out to them Friday, then they could be under the old rules. So realtors out there listening, you have time to sell a property and get it under contract and get your borrower under application up until the close of business Friday, and we'll be under the old rules.
And I would like to say for the realtors, real estate agents, brokers, buyers, and sellers, please go easy on the lenders and please help them as much as you can, because this is going to be, it's a really tough.
Amen.
Tough, especially $5 million fines. No, it's going to be a little, I think there's going to be a little bit of friction there, a little bit of extra stress, because we're always under the gun in this industry, and especially lenders, because you guys get called from everybody, the agents, the title companies, the escrow, buyers, seller, everybody. So, wow, this has been really, really, really enlightening. We'll have to have you back. I want to mention to callers on the line what is exempt are HELOCs, reverse mortgages, mobile homes. Am I missing anything?
No, those are the three that come
okay.
to mind. Yes.
HELOCs, correct. Reverse mortgages,
and some construction loans. If they
okay.
have more than 60 days, so that could be a partial exemption. They would have different forms.
Wow, awesome. So, and let's get your contact information again and any parting message you want to give our audience, and then we're going to sign off.
Well, Laura Fournier with Equity Resources, and my phone number is 301-674-7716. And I just want to thank you, Natalie. It's just been my pleasure to talk to you and everybody that's out there listening. It was fun talking about it, and I would be honored to come back and talk about it again, because there's
definitely
going to be some
good stuff. Oh, thank you. You just committed to it. You just committed because we're going to get you back. This is going to be an interesting next 3 months to a year, I can guarantee.
Yes, it will be. Never a dull moment. So just,
hopefully we're not going to be picketing at the White House. No.
I'll be there.
Me too. Me too. Hey, thank you. Thank you, Laura. And to everybody out there, I wish you peace.
Thank you for joining us on Realty Universal Radio. Our hope is that you are enlightened, encouraged, and mobilized to be an agent of change. Realty Universal is on Facebook. Join us there. Follow us also on Twitter at Realty Universal. And for more information, you can go to RealtyUniversal.com. Make it a great day.
Right.
When I'm going to text you the link, And then you can use it any way you want. If you ever want to cut it up or splice it or just use a couple sentences, or you can do any of that.
Okay, great.
And I'll give you that info
Thank
on how
you.
To do it. You're welcome. I hope to talk to you soon.
All righty. Thank you, Natalie.
Thanks, Laura. See you later.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Bye.